The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
I'm in conflict today, and it is a conflict that I think every American should be struggling with. Here it is. Yesterday, announcement from Apple. It's almost hard to believe, but then again, it's hard to believe anything anymore. Yesterday, Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, confirmed that the technology giant is pledging to spend $350 billion in new U.S.-based investments over the next 5 years. Some of that money they are just repatriating from overseas holdings, and some from their U.S. reserves and expected income. $350 billion investment in the United States over the next 5 years. New manufacturing, R&D, new partnerships, new products, new stores. $350 billion. Now, let me put that in context. Sitting at 12.87 degrees latitude, 121.7 degrees longitude, sits a little island. We know it as the nation of the Philippines. It's a lovely nation. It's filled with 100 million lovely people. And last year, their GDP was $330 billion. So what Apple is promised is to spend more than the entire economy of the Philippines. That is astonishing. It's also more than Israel at $340 billion. It's more than Hong Kong, more than Malaysia, more than Denmark, more than South Africa, more than Colombia. In fact, there are only 30 nations on Earth who will generate more in total GDP next year than Apple is going to invest in the United States of America. Wow. Let's put that into context. And Apple isn't alone. They're merely joining a growing chorus of companies who are now planning massive new investments in the United States, building new manufacturing plants, new capital investments, new hires, call centers, technology teams, service departments. What does that mean for us? It means jobs. It means new technology. It means a booming economy. It means growing communities. Since November of 2016, 80 major U.S. corporations have announced plans to repatriate overseas monies back to the United States, something that this program has been calling for and saying could happen and warns against, because there's so much money overseas that it could actually cause us inflation if it comes pouring back fast. But the Obama administration would have nothing to do with it. It would pay dividends to investors. It would build factories, buy new equipment, and hire people. Across those 80 companies, we are now well over $1.3 trillion in new planned investment here in the United States of America. And that doesn't count the tens of thousands of small business owners. So if you listen to my show last Friday, I was really upset. The whole crap hole fiasco at the White House, and I raged against our president. I expressed great frustration about him. So here's my conflict. Trump ran on a platform where he claimed to be a deal maker. Not in the way that I expected it to happen, but yeah, when it comes to the economy, it looks like he is coming through. When he said, I'm going to be good for Wall Street and Main Street, so far, he has proven true. He said he would pass a tax plan. Trillions of dollars would come from the U.S. from offshore tax havens. Yep. He said that companies would hire more, build more, pay employees bonuses. The minimum wage you wouldn't have to worry about regulating because companies would start to raise that themselves. Yep. From Bezos to Musk to Cook to Diamond. We're now learning all of that is true. It's all happening. So here's what we're left with. We have a good Trump. We have a good Trump, and we have a not so good Trump. We have a bad Trump. The good Trump talks about getting things done, and he gets things done. He paints a vision of this is what's going to happen, and we all know through common sense. I shouldn't say that. A lot of us know through common sense that's how the economy works. And he somehow or another, still without the help of his own party, it's still happening. Good. Good. And then we have the bad Trump, the one that gets really frustrated in discussions. He makes verbal attacks. He is insensitive. It's unproductive. And it's embarrassing. So what do we do? Well, the man is who he is. He's both of those things. He's president of the United States, and he does some things that I really admire, and he does some things I'm really embarrassed by. I guess what we have to do is stop believing the lie that we have to buy into everything anyone on our side does. It's okay to say, you know what? I really disagree with him here. But look at this. This way we're supposed to treat our leaders, it's also the way we're supposed to treat one another. And the evidence is really clear, at least when it comes to the economy. Miracles have happened in the last 12 months.
It's Thursday, January 18th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
See, here's the problem. The problem is everybody switches sides when you don't have to. When you don't have to. You just be consistent. Just be consistent. For instance, I thought it was okay to shut down the government against Obamacare because we believed in something. The Democrats, of course, didn't think that was right. They thought that was going to hurt a lot of people, that people were going to starve, they were going to lose their houses, they wouldn't be able to get their medicine. We'll lose all credibility in the world because we're going to start defaulting on loans. Do you remember this? And what an evil guy Ted Cruz was, even though Ted Cruz didn't have the ability to shut it down. It was the House, not the Senate. But he was the most evil guy, and it was these reckless, insensitive, uncaring brutes that just took it upon themselves to hold all of America hostage. Now, I didn't see it that way. I thought it was a smart move, and the government doesn't actually shut down. It only shuts down non-essential services and non-essential people. Employees. Well, my point of view is if you're non-essential, you should never get brought back on. Okay, with an exception of the military, because I think everybody, the sergeants and everybody below, they don't get paid. So you pass a bill so the military continues to still operate. You make sure that, you know, if there's anything in Department of Homeland Security, there's anything with medical, that is taken care of. But everything else, nope, you're non-essential. Bye-bye. Oh, my gosh. If I said that, and I did, when Ted Cruz was standing up and saying, yeah, the government shutdown's not so bad, it's a pretty sweet place to be today because I can be completely consistent. Now, if you were a Democrat, oh my, how exhausting is your life? We went back and we've compiled what the Democrats said then and what they're saying now. And when you hear what Chuck Schumer said then and what Chuck Schumer said now, holy cow. Mental gymnastics. This is the gold medal for mental gymnastics. Listen.
Some Democrats are saying they will not vote to fund the government at the end of this week unless Republicans embrace a bipartisan solution for the so-called Dreamers.
But we still can't say with any certainty that a government shutdown will be avoided. Senator Cruz may have landed in the record books with that long speech.
So I'm not leaving any American behind. I'm not going to vote on something that isn't a part of this deal, a part of this package.
Even those who don't like Obamacare say it would be better for them to deal with this in the normal course of legislation.
Are Democrats going to give up and agree to a short-term continuing resolution?
I think I speak for the vast majority of members of the Democratic caucus. We're not going to desert these young people.
Here you have a handful of right-wing extremists who are trying to annul, do away with the election results of a year ago. We are going to do what we want to do.
Are they willing to accept a spending deal without a fix to protect Dreamers? A few have already said their answer is no.
This shutdown is continuing to harm our country, our reputation. It is a needless, manufactured, self-imposed wound.
Does that mean we're headed for a government shutdown?
What we have got to do, it seems to me, is to pass the Dreamers legislation.
It never occurred to me to bring down the United States government and cause pain for millions of workers. Because I can't get my way.
Any bill that funds the government must also include a fix for DACA.
This is playing with fire. We could do the same thing on immigration. We believe strongly in immigration reform. We could say we're shutting down the government. We're not going to raise the debt ceiling until you pass immigration reform. It would be governmental chaos.
Before January 19th, in order to avert that partial government shutdown. But really what this is going to come down to is DACA and the issue of immigration. At least Democrats are saying that they are united in their opposition.
They have problems with that bill. We will be happy to sit down and talk to them about a reasonable approach to do it. But we're not going to do it with a gun to the heads of the American people.
If they fail to include it in the continuing resolution, there are many of us who will be troubled by that and will take appropriate response. For goodness sakes, this is irresponsible and it's reckless. Why does this senator or the Tea Party Republicans think they can pick and choose the priorities of the American government?
Wow. And the Russian judge gives them a 10.
That is, it's incomprehensible how those are the same people. I mean, the Chuck Schumer one is the best one.
Yeah, he said we could do this with immigration, but we wouldn't. It would be reckless. Chuck.
You're doing it right now. He actually gave the hypothetical of what his future behavior would be and called it ridiculous and that he would never do it. And then here he is doing it. The Durbin one is really good as well in there. I mean, that is
all
just
of them.
Insanity.
All of them are good. The Bernie Sanders. How these people can just hijack and what they're trying to do is trying to reverse the election from a year ago. Hello. It's amazing.
It really is amazing.
We'll have that posted at theblaze.com and we'll tweet it out. We just finished it a few minutes ago and I'll get it to the Blaze right away so you can see it because it's great. You have to send that everywhere. Because when you look at it, you know what? Bowie, can we have just add one thing? Then now. So the people who aren't really paying attention know this was then, this is now.
I mean, you know, look, these words just don't mean anything when they come out of these people's mouths. They don't mean anything. They don't even think.
It's so tiring.
It's not even an argument. They don't believe either side of it. You know, I mean, is it like, look at what, like Cruz back in 2013. He wanted to defund Obamacare. There was a bunch of things that were going down that road when he was doing that. He believed he had leverage because of the government shutdown, because of the debt ceiling, and he tried to get something done that he believed was important. Right? That was what he was doing in 2013. That is what the Democrats are doing now. That is understandable by both sides in both situations. You are a minority party. You have no power to get these things done on your own. So you use what little power you have, which is leverage, right? As a big deadline that everyone knows to get done. And you say, give me a couple of things and then I'll vote for you. DACA's the thing that he went for. They're going for here. A big, long-term goal of Democrats. This is not a big Republican priority. This is a big long-term goal of Democrats. They are trying to get done at the very end here because it's the only way they have a chance of getting anything done when the Republicans control the other side. It's the exact same thing that Cruz was doing, with the exception of at least Obamacare had something to do with the budget.
Yes.
Like, this is just completely
and unconstitutional.
Yeah, exactly.
At least we thought at the time before John.
I still believe.
I still do, course. Too. But
the point is, at least it was related in some way to the budget. It was about spending money. This is, the Democrats have wanted this for a long time. And remember, they didn't even get it until the second term of Barack Obama. They didn't even get it at the beginning of Barack Obama when they had it. He wound up doing it in an unconstitutional way, as I believe. And here they are demanding Republicans pass something that every Republican, including the president, has argued is unconstitutional and should not happen. And they're holding that over the heads of the Republicans on a government shutdown issue. It's worse than what Cruz was doing in many ways.
And I have to tell you, if we give on this, we're worthless. We're absolutely worthless. Republicans, do not blink. I mean, are we for small government or not? What part of non-essential services don't we understand? Seriously, non-essential services. I mean, these people are both the left and the right. Oh, we couldn't cut. Oh, my gosh. Give me the budget for 2 weeks. Give it to me. You know, there's not enough red ink for me to go through that thing. How much could we cut? A buttload. We're beyond broke. It's not going to hurt us to shut this government down for non-essential services. Shut it down. Shut it down. You're going to fold? Why? Because the press is beating you up? Oh my gosh, that's so new and different. I want to talk to you about setting goals for your business. Extremely difficult to reach goals without the right people on your team. ZipRecruiter has transformed how you go about finding them. ZipRecruiter will post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with a single click. And then ZipRecruiter goes out and looks for the most qualified candidates and invites them to apply. This is smart technology. This is not something that is just waiting for you. That's what happens. You post your job and then you wait for somebody who's looking for that kind of job to notice it. ZipRecruiter doesn't wait. It goes and finds them. And that's why 80% of the employers who post on ZipRecruiter see somebody come through that is absolutely qualified in the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. ZipRecruiter, try it for free now at ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
You know, the media wonders why it has no credibility. Well, did you hear the cuts that we played a few minutes ago? Have you seen those anyplace else? Because they have that video available to them. If we did, they certainly do in their archives. And they don't find it important as a credible source to say, you know, Senator Schumer, here you are laying out this very scenario that you're doing now just a few years ago, and you said it would be ridiculous to do that. How do you respond to that now, sir?
Right. And what would he do? He'd find some distinction between the two situations, sure. Which, of course, there are several. I mean, there's several minor distinctions between the issues. The point is that he didn't mean it then, and he doesn't mean it now.
So the thing is with the media is there are two kinds of sins. There's the sin of commission. I was involved. I did it. And then there's the sin of omission. And many times the media is guilty of the second.
And why? why would they be guilty of this? You could make many arguments. They don't like Donald Trump. They don't like Republicans. There's a million arguments to make. I honestly think the real situation is, to them, they didn't want Obamacare to go away, and they do want DACA.
Yes.
So they don't understand why anyone would make these things into parallel.
Yes.
Because that's the thing that they want is happening this time, and the thing they didn't want was happening last time.
And they believe
that's the difference.
They're so arrogant that they believe that anybody who believes differently than them is just uneducated.
Mm-hmm.
That we need to educate them because this is the way it should be. That's the problem with the media in a nutshell.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, I want to continue on this with the press because it's for all of us to look at why does the press not have any credibility and why for half of the country do we not have any credibility? Is it because we're playing musical chairs? Is it because we fail to recognize the duplicity in ourselves? And this started with the audio that we played a few minutes ago, and it's going to be available at The Blaze. We put together, you know, Schumer and Durbin and all of the people on the left saying this is outrageous that the Republicans would shut down the government for some special interest Tea Party crackpot idea. They were just trying to overthrow the election that happened a year ago. And then them today saying that they have to cut the close down the government because of DACA. It's phenomenal. Phenomenal.
And you know, this is the type of time that you're supposed to look and reflect and understand that we have a country here. And, you know, we are patriots, right? We're the people who are working to make this this experiment into something that's real and important.
You have this look on your face. We've known each other too long, Stu.
Yeah.
I don't know where you're going here. We were partners on going about the press.
I think a lot of the stuff today, but I think there's an important piece of audio that we've not played yet. Probably the most important piece of audio that anyone in America can hear today.
This is when it's either about Alex Jones or me. So
I don't know what you're talking about. Let's just hear about America.
A long time ago, there was another young, scrappy team in Philadelphia that was an underdog on its own turf.
What?
And that team came to be known as the United States of America. And the Colonials heard the same noise. Their defenses are too strong. Mm-hmm. Their ground assault is too powerful. Mm-hmm. Let them come. Let them learn that one man defending his home is more powerful than 10 men invading it. Let the Vikings ride this wave of being the country's new sweethearts. Mm-hmm. I've heard it this week. Without the Vikings, there'd be no one for America to root for. Without the city of Philadelphia, there would be no America. Mm-hmm. Let the Vikings have Grandma Millie. She's 99 years old. The Eagles have Uncle Sam. He's 242. This city and these Eagles know the two greatest chips on the American shoulder are taxation without representation and no respect despite domination. Washington, Hamilton, Peterson, Roseman, these colors don't run. And on Sunday against that Eagles D, neither will the Vikings. Don't tread on me and don't ever disrespect the womb of democracy. Put your bets on Philadelphia, fly Eagles fly to Minnesota, and God bless America. Underappreciated.
There we go.
You're about to get an ice ball to the head. You really are. I mean, first of all, let's be honest. God is against the Eagles. I believe God is against the Eagles.
What are you talking about?
God's against the Eagles. That's all there is to it.
That is not true.
It is true. They threw an ice ball at Santa.
Oh, stop.
That's God's
thing.
You know, that's the Santa's on God's errand.
First, there's a lot to say there, okay?
Yeah.
That Santa was
what?
Was
got
under
an ice ball to the head.
Well, he got several.
Yes.
But also, it was not really Santa. He showed up. He just threw up. That was not actually Santa Claus, kids. That was just some guy.
Santa's last words were, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." And they are suffering that penalty. Yeah, I'm telling you.
I hope that you're incorrect, but just remember this weekend when you're thinking, hey, I'm going to, you know, Vikings. That sounds pretty American. No, it doesn't.
I am so, I couldn't care. I'm going to be watching and rooting for the Vikings this weekend. I may begin a fast for the Vikings. Yes.
You know, that would be something you would do.
Yes.
One win away from the Super Bowl.
Yes.
One win.
One win.
And one.
Well, it would actually be two. I mean, you could play in the Super Bowl, but there's a difference between playing in it and winning.
I said one win to get there.
Yeah.
And then when they're playing the Patriots, I'm going to reverse my American argument.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But that's a whole other story for another week.
All right. So, but thank you for that side route. Okay. So could we go to, for instance, back to the argument of the press?
Mm-hmm.
They think that they are living in 1972. Have you seen the post yet?
No, I have. You've been talking about it.
Yeah, you need to see the post.
I really want to, and you said it was good. I mean, I would assume it's nothing but a praise the media for being amazing type of movie, but
no, it's actually, I mean, if you really watch it, it actually excoriates the media, but I don't think anybody in the movie or Hollywood or in the media will ever notice it.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, the Pentagon Papers are about the scandal that really started under Truman, then went to Eisenhower, then Jack Kennedy, and then Johnson, and it was exposed under Nixon, and it ties all of these presidents into a massive cover-up. And at one point in the post, Bill Bradley's character, they can't even bring themselves to say Jack Kennedy. You know, they're like, that means Truman and Eisenhower, and they all kind of get quiet. And and John F. Kennedy.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, they come back time to time where they're reflecting on their relationship, their very cozy relationship with John F. Kennedy. And at some point they say, you know what? John F. Kennedy was using us. He invited us in and he made us his friends, not because he was friends. He was a politician. He was using us. He knew if we were friends, we wouldn't expose him on X, Y, and Z. So that lesson is in there. Is anybody in the media going to get that? No. But at least it was in there.
Yeah.
It was quite shocking that it was in there. But if you look at it, and you see the post, at one point, the New York Times is shut down from releasing the Pentagon Papers. And they have a decision to make at the Washington Post. Are we going to publish? Well, if we publish, we could go to jail. Publish them. All right. And their friends are involved. Publish them anyway. It's the right thing to do. The government is out of control. So they publish them. But you'll see in this, the communication was so different. I believe the press still thinks that it's 1972. Mm. That if it's not in the New York Times, it didn't happen. It's not in the Washington Post, didn't happen. It's not in the mainstream media, didn't happen. They're stuck in 1972 when the Times is shut down on this. There's nowhere they can publish these unless a paper puts them out. Now you have the internet.
Yeah. I mean, I think yesterday was the 20-year anniversary of Drudge posting the Monica Lewinsky link. I think that 20 years ago, that was 1998, January 17th, Drudge Report first broke the news of President Bill Clinton's sexual
that
relationship
changed
with
everything.
Monica Lewinsky. And that was, again, if you remember, Newsweek that was sitting on that and now is basically not even an entity anymore. I mean, yeah. It's sold for $1 and it's now just doing trash online, basically. It's another, you know, tabloid. But at that time, Newsweek had this story. They killed it. And many other news sources also had the story and killed it because various reasons. But I mean, a big part of it was, you know,
friendlies.
And look, you know, the Drudge Report did that, changed the way that news comes out. We've gone through 20 years of this and the media still acts as if they can hold these secrets.
So here's the biggest thing that we can do is we can take the audio from the people in the media and on the media that are telling you things that are not true. For instance, we just did that with the government shutdown. This is something from the Washington Free Beacon that they did on trickle-down economics. When I was growing up with Ronald Reagan, You know, you heard all the bashing of trickle-down economics, and you never really had anything to point to other than everybody had jobs, that it worked. Well, we sure have that now. The media is not going to embarrass the people who say trickle-down economics doesn't work because they need that theory to be discredited. But you need to know the truth. And so now you have the ability to see these videos and pass them everywhere, make them viral, because it's proof they were wrong. For instance, here's the evidence on trickle-down economics.
It feels like you're relying on this tax cut of the corporations, of the wealthy, to trickle down.
Yeah, Southwest and American Airlines both announcing they're going to give $1,000 bonuses to employees following the tax overhaul.
Wage increases don't follow tax cuts like this.
So the world's largest retailer giving its U.S. employees a bonus, a wage increase, and expanded maternity and parental leave. So you're creating a huge tax cut.
Right.
And you might not get wage growth.
Right.
Capital One Financial, which just confirmed to CNBC that they will raise the minimum wage for all U.S.-based employees at Capital One to $15 per hour.
And anybody who thinks that this corporate tax cut is going to trickle down to lift wages has a staggering ignorance of how public companies function.
Wells Fargo said it would raise its minimum wage to $15 per hour.
That the day we cut the corporate tax rate, you know, wages are going to suddenly jump up when there's absolutely no historical evidence whatsoever that this will happen.
Boeing announced $300 million in investments for corporate giving and workplace improvements.
I'll ask you plainly, are you living in a fantasy world?
AT&T announced that it will invest $1 billion in the U.S. in 2018. Also, for 200,000 workers, it will provide them a $1,000 bonus.
That is, how do I say this nicely, absolute nonsense. There are no examples anywhere of companies distributing their tax savings to their workers.
Sinclair Broadcasting and Kansas City Southern are among others committing to bonuses.
Generally speaking, when companies get tax cuts, they keep them for themselves and distribute them to the shareholders.
BB&T pledging to give out bonuses of $1,200 for almost 75% of its workforce. And
who says that giving corporations more money will make them raise wages?
It's also raising its minimum wage from $12 to $15 an hour.
Will they actually increase wages? Will employees actually see the benefits of a corporate tax cut? None of them will raise a hand because that's simply not true.
Bank of America says it's planning to shell out $1,000 bonuses to nearly 150,000 of its employees.
It is a clear cut for the top, and it's a hope and a wish for anyone else.
Its CEO announced the company would award special $1,000 bonuses to more than 100,000 eligible frontline and non-executive employees.
The crumbs that they are giving to workers to kind of put the schmooze on is so pathetic.
By the way, I'd like to add the announcement yesterday of a $350 billion investment, hiring new employees, building new stores, building new campuses from Apple. Seems like trickle-down economics might actually, seems like there might actually be much more than a shred of evidence that tax cuts work. It's up to us now to be the guardians of that truth and spread it. You'll find it at on my Twitter page and also Facebook, glennbeck.com, and The Blaze. All right. Studies show that security systems deter burglars. Every 8 seconds, there is a burglary. But burglar systems deter burglars? Yes. If you have a security system, you have a much better chance of nobody breaking in. Now, what do you have? You might have a security system that you don't own that is probably way outdated. It is all wired, and it probably costs you $40 to $60 every month without an end in sight. Let me recommend a brilliant security system built by SimpliSafe. It's a smart system that has sensors that will protect every point of access to your home. If a burglar tries to break in, the siren goes off. Police are called. Some systems, they take a picture of the person that has opened the door, broken the glass, so you can just hand it right to the police when they come. 24/7 monitoring is $14.99 a month, and you are never locked into a contract. You own the system, and they let you try it for 60 days. Money-back guarantee. There's no wiring, so they're not doing anything permanent to your house. You can have it in your apartment. You could have it in your home. SimpliSafe. SimpliSafeBeck.com. Go there now. You'll save a buttload of money at SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So we haven't talked about Bitcoin in a while. Are we broke yet again? We were multimillionaires there for a while.
Multi-billionaires,
and now we're in debt, and it's all is destroyed. And
well, sadly, I read an article the other day that the Winklevoss twins are now ex-billionaires.
Not the Winklevoss.
The Winklevoss twins were billionaires, and now they're ex-billionaires.
I wasn't alerted to the Winklevoss fortune.
Well, you know, so they had a lot of money. Of course, they sued Zuckerberg for Facebook, right? Those are the guys that had hired Zuckerberg to code Facebook, to code something just like Facebook, and then he just did his own thing at that time, which is a very strange move by Zuckerberg. But anyway, they got a bunch of money. A lot of it went into Bitcoin. They became billionaires, and now they're ex-billionaires. But I think they might be back to the billionaire category today because it's back up to almost 12,000.
Give me the chart? Because here's the thing that people don't understand about Bitcoin. I mean, it is a wild white knuckle ride.
It has been, yeah.
And it might go to, I mean, as we said from the beginning, might go to zero. Mm-hmm. Don't think so. But I put my money in for a long term. So,
yeah.
So, here it is.
So starting late 2015, it started with a 37% drop in 2015, then 136% rise, then a 34% drop. Then a 76% rise, then a 29% drop, then a 219% rise, then a 38% drop, then a 166% rise, then a 40% drop. Then this most recent 556% rise and now a 43% drop. So, I mean, first of all, you'll take that pattern.
I'll take that pattern. It goes up every time.
It goes up and then it goes down.
Yeah.
But these drops are not what normal investors are used to. You don't get 40% drops very often.
But you also don't get 500% increases
very often.
That
is the trade-off, and it's a good one
so
far.
Yeah,
we'll see what
far.
Happens.
We'll see.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Who's standing up for free speech? Is anyone doing it? Because it's on trial again in the Supreme Court, and this time it's related to abortion, and the stakes couldn't be higher. The case is the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates versus Becerra. Becerra is a California Attorney General. It's about a new law in California that requires pro-life pregnancy centers to post signs in prominent places to inform women that California offers low-cost or, in some cases, free abortions. The signs must include a phone number for abortion clinics. Okay, couldn't disagree more because I believe abortion is murder, but you want to be fair. Does this law require the abortion clinics to talk about the pro-life clinics and provide phone numbers? California can do all of the abortion clinic advertising it wants, but it is forcing those who are firmly against abortion to promote the abortion industry. Not only is California clearly violating free speech, it is aggressively endorsing the murder of unborn children over efforts to protect them. What have we become? It's like a marriage counselor forced to post advertisements for hitmen. You know, that way, you know, the client should know that there's a cheaper way out than divorce. If you crack open this legal door, imagine all of the other insane positions that the governments could force us to start endorsing. Should churches be forced to post things in the church that say there is no God? This, make no mistake, is the fairness doctrine in your life. Imagine mandatory signs inside your church promoting atheism, except the atheist gatherings would not be required to promote your religion. 226 years after the passage of the First Amendment, you'd think our understanding of free speech would be secure, but it is not. The freedom of speech part still is not clear to most people, I contend, on both sides of the aisle, but certainly not in California and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. They're only interested in protecting speech that they approve. And not only they are protecting it, they're forcing people who disagree with their position to endorse it. This is tyranny. This is telling people who are trying to save Jews in World War II that they have to post anti-Jewish propaganda. They're saving lives. They don't believe that the Jews are inhuman. The people who run these nonprofit pro-life pregnancy centers are humble, loving, caring, genuine, hardworking, and they believe it's life. Their mission is to help women and save lives. They're the unsung heroes on the front line of an American Holocaust. The 21st century Oscar Schindler, saving people from being murdered. Apparently, these pro-life pregnancy centers are a little too good at saving lives because the government is going out of its way to persecute these people and impose their crazy notion that the baby growing inside of you is actual human life with inherent value that deserves protection. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is already, of course, California. Yeah, that's right. They got to do that. The decision should be a brainer for the Supreme Court. But unfortunately, I can't count on anything being sane. Pray that the Supreme Court goes the right way on this.
It's Thursday, January 18th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, the big March for Life is happening this weekend, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it happening this weekend? Yeah. Can you check it out? Is it this weekend or next weekend?
I think it's this weekend.
You know, I've never been. I took my family to the first local march for this. I've never been that guy. But, and I'm going to call my wife. Maybe we go up to this weekend.
Tomorrow.
It's tomorrow. Mm-hmm. What time?
I don't know. I'm going to look that up as we're talking.
Yeah, I just my family, you know, the kids have to be involved in these things. You know, we're so about sheltering our kids. No, they have to know. Somebody asked me the other day, what's the best thing you can teach your kids? What's the most important thing? How to listen to the Spirit. I think that's it. Everything else, they're going to be able to find on YouTube. They're going to be able to Google. They'll be able to access through the internet. You don't need the knowledge. You know, there's this, the idea of a Jeopardy champion. How useless is that compared to what it used to be? Man, I'd like to be around that guy because he's a walking encyclopedia. Well, I got one in my pocket. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there, everything that you could be taught or need to know, you can find it on your own. What we don't have is we haven't strengthened the ethics of what it means to be a human. We can't decide what it means to be alive. We are not strengthening that internal compass, that idea of right and wrong. That's really the only thing you should be worried about with your kids, because they're going to be able to access everything else. They have to have an internal compass of what is right and wrong. They have to be able to have that sense of listening, you know, to the Spirit, or listening to themselves, to where where they can say, you know what, this doesn't feel right. I'm not, this is not going in the right direction. I don't know. I can't define it. That's good. That's good. And we're dismissing that. And we are replacing it with, you know, degrees and knowledge from schools. I think schools are going to end up, mark my words, in 10 years, it will be, unless you're going to be a doctor or something like that, schools like we have them now are going to be disabling. They are going to be something that really smart companies say, oh, yeah, she wouldn't have done that, because it's going to make you think in the box. You don't want to think in the box anymore. So when is it starts tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow looks like 1 p.m. is about the time it begins. And it's been going on since 1974. In 2013, there's 644,000 people, over 650,000 people were believed to attend. I'm just looking at some of the numbers, and they're obviously huge. It's become, the first year, I think it was 20,000, and now it's over 600,000 as of a couple of years ago.
And President Trump is speaking. The first time president is speaking?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like Reagan and Bush had spoken like remotely via
satellite.
Telephone. And then it looks like Trump is going to be the first one, I guess, by video that's going to be doing it. But it's certainly a positive to give more attention to this event. Really important. And, you know, I mean, again, we've said this before, but it's like you could really go every other issue that we talk about on the show. You can argue pales in comparison that if the conservative movement achieved only one thing in its entire existence, and it was getting rid of this process, making abortion legal, and these hundreds of thousands and millions of children that are not here that should be here, if that's the only thing it ever accomplishes, it's an incredible movement. Even if we lose if tax rates go to 80%,
yeah,
it's still worth it.
Because you know how concerned I am on tech, this solves much of that problem. I'm worried about the growing intrusion of government. This solves that problem. Because if you see the individual baby as an individual with rights that must be protected, no one has a right to take away its life. No one has a right to do that. It is an individual. You start to say, wait, okay, hang on just a second. Why can I take away your rights elsewhere? Why can I force you here, here, and here? What is life? Do we have a right to snuff out life? Do we have a right to prioritize? No, your life is no longer worth living. No, we don't. We don't.
You know, humanity many, many times has made a decision to look at some group of what everyone knows is a person and make arguments denying that it is a person. It's happened over and over and over and over again. This is the only one we don't look back at horror yet. And it will happen. At some point, there will be a society in the future that looks back and says, oh my God, they made what argument? That you could just kill all these kids? That's insanity. Just like we look back at slavery in that way, just like we look back at in Nazi Germany in that way, that people actually made arguments and it was things were legal and all of that went on, and that will at some point in a very glorious future that I really, really hope occurs and believe will occur, we will look back at that in that way, finally. But right now, we all, you know, the people don't even think about it. I mean, it's legal. It's become this cultural war issue. It's become this thing that people don't, it's just politics. It's red team versus blue team. It's got to get out of that dynamic. And technology's helped that a long way, I think, you know, with things like the ultrasound and the 3D ultrasound. And, you know, at some point, the denial that this is a person becomes so insanely ridiculous. Hopefully people stop doing it. I don't know when that happens. It seems, you know, a lot of rational people, a lot of people who make a lot of sense on a lot of different issues, a lot of people that I like, a lot of people who I can hang out with and have dinner with and have great conversations with, look at that issue
in a way that I can't fathom a human being would look
so
at.
So here's the problem that I have with most of those people, because a lot of those people will say, look, I don't want the government, the ones I respect, I don't want the government regulating what I can and cannot do to my own body.
You're looking at kind of the libertarian approach.
Yes,
to this. Yeah.
Yes.
Because they're the only ones, by the way, we should point out.
What?
It's the minority of people who actually make that
yes,
argument.
But it's the only logical one that even has any ground with me. It doesn't, because right. I have to protect everyone's right. Mm-hmm. And so you're now making decisions for two. Mm-hmm. You know, you're eating for two. You're caring. You are the protector of a child now inside of you. And if you won't be, I have to be. So that's the only one. But I will tell you, the ones who are, you know, that make this about, you know, there's too many children. No, there's not. No, there's not.
No.
No, there's not. Look at the weight for children if you want to adopt. Look at the weight. There's not too many children. There's nobody who will take care of them. Yes, there are. Yes, there are. The second argument always is about, well, it's the woman's right to choose, and they'll never go and look at the baby. They have to try to make that into something else. Well, it's not really a baby. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I mean, it's not an octopus. It's not a cancer growth. It's a baby.
It's one of those things we all No. And to participate in the other side of that argument, you have to deny something that you absolutely know is true. And the most, to be honest, most people don't go to that place. They go to the place that you were in many, many years ago when you were pro-choice, which is, number one, I kind of want the option if something goes wrong, right? And number two, I don't want to think about it. It's really uncomfortable, and I don't want to deal with it, and I don't want to think about it. It's legal. You know what? It's one of those issues. Let's just not talk about it. And I think that's where a lot of people are.
But you know what? If we were honest with each other, for those people who say it's not a baby, it does have significant ramifications all around. And if you wanted to say, okay, it's legal, we would not be talking about posting, hey, have your baby and give it away. We wouldn't have to post those things. What we would be posting, if we were honest, is the pictures of the baby, the pictures of abortion. Nobody wants to look at that. Now, we post, do we not, or is it Canada that posts on cigarettes? It's Canada. They post the black lung. They post the pictures of the disease. Nobody's having a problem looking at that because they know it's just an organ and it's bloody and it's ugly and, oh, yeah, that's the result of that. Why do they post those pictures? Because they know it stops people from smoking. That's an organ. Well, this is just a lump of tissue. Why are you not allowed to see it? Because it's not. It's a baby. It's a baby, and they know it. The scary thing is just the amount of delusion that you have to accept and live in to be strongly, you know, hey, cut them up, get them out, let's sell the baby parts. You're a monster. You really are a monster if you've thought about it. I think a lot of people do what you just said. They don't want to think about it, and so they just blindly go along. So there are a lot of people that were writing to me and saying, why do you still do commercials for gold? Bitcoin. I thought you were all for Bitcoin. I am. I am for Bitcoin. I still am for Bitcoin, even though it's gone down about, what, 45%. I still am. That's a bet. That's a wager. That's going into the casino. That's like, maybe this could happen. Gold is not that. For me, I buy it as an insurance policy, something that I know will be there, something that I know is going to take me through the worst of times. Goldline has just been purchased by a really huge company, and they finished the year with a blowout sale. This company is the largest precious metal dealers in the country. And so they have access to different things, and so they can put different things on sale. They have a kickoff sale going on right now. Addition to the new discounted pricing on all of their popular products, they're also offering a starter kit now where you can buy one gold legal tender bar card and 60 silver rounds at their employee cost. Now, these are those little legal tender things that you can keep in your pocket. You can give them to your kids. You can give them, you know, when you're traveling, keep them. If something goes down, you actually have money. You have gold. If you bought gold from Goldline before, I would give them a call. See about the prices that they have now. You have never seen them have prices like this before. They have been loyal sponsors of this program for over 10 years, and I have never seen them do prices like this. New owners, better prices, gold. The same great service and gold. Goldline, call them, 866-GOLDLINE, 866-GOLDLINE, 465-3546. Yep, Bitcoin's a great bet. Uh-huh. This is just something that you know will hold its value, and that is gold. Read their important risk information. Find out if gold or silver is right for you. 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE, or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
I was on IMUS this morning in New York, and I think we have to put him on death watch because he was incredibly nice. I even tried to pick a fight with him, and he just kept going back to, you know, I think you are you've done more good than most people, and you're very, very smart. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he is. Yeah, he's about to flatline this afternoon. So we're starting the Don Imus death watch, and it's
this will be funny until
he dies.
You know, he dies, and then it'll be true. However, that is the time he would find it most funny.
Most funny.
So, yeah.
I would love. Yeah. I barely know Don, but I would love to give the eulogy at Don's funeral. And if they don't let me, we might just have a Don Imus funeral on the air because he's got to go out in the way that he lived his life.
Which
will be uncomfortable.
Yeah, it will.
At the time, but I think that's what we have to do.
Long-term, so. Legendary. Short-term, uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way he lived his life.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, yesterday we had a guest on who was talking about that we are at a we're at a place that I don't that people don't talk about, but they feel. We all know that we're at this we're something's happened. Something is going on. Something is coming. I remember Condoleezza Rice talking about it when I was at Headline News, and I found it fascinating that she would use this language. And she said, these are the birth pangs of the things to come. And, you know, that sounds a little biblical. And even if it's not biblical, you look at that language and say, well, birth pangs of the things to come. That means you're going to have pain and then it'll go away for a while. And then you'll have pain and it'll go away for a while. And then it'll get faster and faster and more intense. And in the end, you're giving birth to something. And I have wondered since then, what is it we're giving birth to? And I'm not sure anybody has asked that question. I think we are so focused on the game of politics, on the game of life, and I don't put the average American in this. Well, maybe I don't know. I don't know a lot anymore. And I actually think that's a good thing. But I think the average American feels it and they don't know what it is. And for anybody who is thinking
They're puzzled by what's going on because we see we are completely disconnecting from common sense. We're disconnecting from everything that is real. I mean, what does it mean to be a man anymore? A gentleman. Do gentlemen exist? Is that a thing? Have we decided that gentlemen don't exist anymore?
No, there's a really great club. It's called Gentleman's Club. That we go to all the time.
No, seriously. Do they exist anymore, Stu?
I don't know. I think all the things that built a gentleman are kind of looked down on by society now.
Right? What are those things that a gentleman does? Because we're told that men are just worthless. We're told that, you know, men are all creeps. We're now, in the strangest turn of events, this Me Too movement has turned from empowering women quickly to I'm helpless. I'm a little China doll that I don't have any power to say no. I don't even know my own mind. I might be engaging in something, but later I can feel bad and you should have stopped me. What? What? To you know, empower to chart your own course. And then once you get right to that point, the movement becomes, but you're really not in charge. You're not capable of it. I don't even understand it.
It's such a weird turn of events. Because you're right. It's
bizarre.
It's taking the agency away from women for their rights to be able to do the things they should be. They should be able to say, you know, no. And this is not even to the level of Harvey Weinstein, which is obviously everyone knows that. But even at the level of Aziz Ansari or anybody else, if at any moment during an encounter you express the idea that, no, I would not like to continue, it should end right there.
Yep.
And that is absolutely part of this and should be 100% acknowledged by everybody. But the idea that you have to read the mind of the other person when they are sending signals that they do want to continue for much of the time, you have to be able to say no. You have to be able to say it. I think Ben Shapiro had a piece of audio that we had today.
Let's play Ben Shapiro on this.
There were some nonverbal cues that were given, including getting completely naked in his apartment and then performing sex acts multiple times on him. If I were Aziz Ansari, I would be thinking that's a pretty solid nonverbal cue that you might be into things. Mm-hmm. Like I have a hard time believing that she really expects Aziz Ansari or that anyone from Me Too expects men to be mind readers. Is it the job of men to now decide when women are capable of consent? I thought the entire purpose of the feminist movement was to say that women are supposed to be the mistresses of their own consent, that it's not up to a man to say, listen, I don't think it's possible for you to give consent right now. I don't think this sex is in your best interest, and I don't think that we ought to be doing this. That would be mansplaining to the woman, presumably.
That was the whole point of the sexual liberation, right? That women could control this destiny and should control their own destiny and make their own decisions on these matters. And now we're at the point where we now want guys to make the decisions for the women so that they can, you know, Louis C.K. had the similar situation. You know, again, there's some details that are always a little bit in doubt on these things, but his point was that he basically would pull his stuff out and do all sorts of stuff to himself in front of women. But he'd ask first. And if they said yes, he would do it. Now, the pushback on that is because he was a powerful comedian, he should have known.
And they were comedians.
He should have known that they couldn't say no because they admired him for his stand-up comedy. So he shouldn't have done those things, not because it's gross, which of course it is, but beyond that, he shouldn't have done those things because he should have known they weren't capable, women weren't capable of saying no to sex acts because he was so funny. And that's the feminist argument.
Yeah. Listen to this. So Ashley Banfield went on HLN and she said, you know, this is ridiculous. He had no power over you. You left the apartment and then came back and did it again. So what? Your date didn't work out the way you wanted it to? You had the power. You already left. So she's getting pushback from this babe.net reporter. listen to this. The way your colleague, Ashley Banfield, someone I'm certain no one under the age of 45 has ever heard of, by the way.
By the way, I'm 41 and I have heard of her. So yeah, that is unfortunately not true.
Ripped into my source directly was one of the lowest, most despicable things I've ever seen in my entire life. Shame on her. Shame on Headline News. Ashley should have talked to me. She could have talked to me or my editor or my publication. But instead, she targeted a 23-year-old woman in one of the most vulnerable moments of her life, someone she has never even met before, just for a little attention. Well, I hope the ratings were worth it. I hope the 500 retweets on the single news write-up made that burgundy lipstick bad highlight second-wave feminist has-been really feel relevant for a little while. She disgusts me. I hope when she has more distance from the moment, she has enough conscience left to feel remotely ashamed. I doubt it, but still. Must be nice to piggyback off the fact that another woman was brave enough to speak up and add another dimension to the societal conversation about sexual assault. She was not assaulted.
No, and that's the new fallback position of the people who are from the Me Too movement, because they're saying, well, we never said we wanted Aziz Ansari fired. We're just saying that we don't like the way that went down. Oh, of course. Because for some reason, we crazily got the idea that this was about getting every person in one of these stories fired. Only because, you know, the history of it is every person who gets mentioned in one of these stories gets fired. So somehow we magically converted this into a story where you seem to be trying to get Aziz Ansari and his career ruined. Somehow that's our fault now. That's our fault. This is a new now that half the people who've watched this story have said, wait a minute, this is ridiculous. It's going over the line. Even people who are complete supporters of this movement. Now that they're saying this story has gone over the line, they're like, what are you talking about? We never said we wanted this man fired. What? How? Where did you get that idea from?
Only some are. The real revolutionaries are still pushing it.
Yeah.
They're still pushing for the silencing of people like Ashley Banfield and anybody who stands up. The real story here is that there is a revolution going on, a real revolution, but it is like the French Revolution. It will purge itself of all of those that have always thought of themselves as revolutionaries. I'm on your side. You're not going far enough. And you'll be burned at the stake, too. It's what happens. It's what happened in France. What happened in France is now happening here. And it's happening with the left. And if you on the left don't understand, they're going to come for you. They're coming for you.
I do love we have to do the end of this, though, because the end of this email to Ashley Banfield or to Headline News at CNN. I would never go on your network. I would never even watch your network. No woman my age would ever watch your network. I will remember this for the rest of my career. I'm 22 and so far not too shabby. And I will laugh the day you fold. Okay. You're 22 and not too shabby. Look. I don't mean to question your opinion of yourself, which is incredibly high, but you're 22, and the one thing that anyone has ever heard that you've done is an article in a publication that no one had ever heard of before last week, and has been roundly mocked by the supporters of the movement you were trying to influence. Not to mention, I'm mildly certain that babe.net will fold before CNN does. I am out on a limb on that one.
Yeah, I think that's way
out.
And here's the thing. She's 22, right?
Yeah.
She works for that website that nobody's ever even heard of.
The one if you type .com, you get a porn site.
Right.
Yeah, that one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Without looking, tell me her name, first name, last name, anything about her.
Sarah? Heather?
I have no Cadence? I have no idea. So
yeah.
Shabby.
It's shabby. A tad shabby. Look. I mean,
hey, shabby chic. Okay?
She can be forgiven to think that this would have worked, right? I mean, she can be... You're in that world, and every single accusation is resulting in some big career explosion for the person who wrote it.
Not going to happen for you.
But, I mean, I don't think it is, because, I mean, you look at this. This is not just right-wingers who are pushing back. Ashley Banfield is not a conservative.
No. No. Neither is the author of Handmaid's Tale.
No.
She's an icon.
A feminist. But again, yeah, but, this is the thing.
Right. Lots of work to do to hit your goals for 2018. One of my goals is to get into better shape and to feel better and to continue to have a good night's sleep. Last year, that was one of my goals, to have a good night's sleep. Casper Mattress has made that one really easy to do. Casper has a unique combination of foams that provide the right pressure relief and comfort so you feel perfectly balanced. It's made of breathable material, so you're guaranteed to sleep cool. Plus, the mattresses are built to last for years. Since I've gotten my Casper, I have had the best sleep I have had in a long, long time. I want you to try this. Now, they don't have them in stores. And the reason why they don't is that's one of the reasons why they can keep them so inexpensive. But also, they know that's bull crap. You don't need a store anymore. And you don't know how you're going to feel, you know, after a week of sleeping on a mattress. I've done stuff in mattress stores. And I'm like, this is the greatest bed ever. 2 days into, you're like, I can't walk. 100 nights in your own home, risk free. They'll ship it to you in a little teeny box. And if you don't love it, you don't have to put it back in the little teeny box. You call them. They'll come and pick it up and they refund every single penny. So start your year off with a good night's sleep guaranteed. Try yours now for 100 nights in your own home. Free shipping, free returns. Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck and you'll save $50 on the purchase of select mattresses. That's Casper.com. Promo code Beck. Save $50 off the select mattresses at Casper.com. Promo code Beck. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
And I found this really interesting. Last night on television, we did something, and maybe we'll get into it next hour. We showed you a poll of Democrats funded by the Democrats, at least a local Democrat, who wanted to show the national Democrats, you're way out of step. You got to stop. And you really have to see this, because it shows that the elites in Washington, the Democrats, are going through their own Tea Party movement right now. They're done with it, and they don't, and nobody's listening to them, and they don't have any place to go. Because we look so extreme on the right. So they're kind of stuck. It's fascinating. There's another poll out, Oprah 2020. Remember how everybody on the left said, oh, that's got, she's got to run. She's got to run.
Mm-hmm.
No, apparently not. A new poll out shows that she's only within 2 points of beating Donald Trump.
Well, she is beating Donald Trump by 2 points.
But, yeah,
poll, right?
she's beating with 2 point
margin.
It's 2 points. That can be changed quickly.
I mean, any poll they've taken this early could change, but that one is a lot tighter than you'd expect
it
from
should
someone.
Be. Yeah. If she's the dream candidate, it should be.
Yeah, she should be 20 up by 20,
points,
right?
Right. But the polling shows that middle American Democrats are saying, I like her, but she's not the president. And I think the left loves her because it's another Obama term. You know, it's just it would be the same stuff from Obama. And if you remember, Oprah used to be a lot more popular. But the minute she started talking about politics, you know, she went to Jeremiah Wright's church for years, too. Now, she got out,
mm-hmm.
but she went to Jeremiah's Wright's church. She has a very different philosophy on religion. Okay, that's cool. Totally cool. But not necessarily in step with Democrats in the center of the country.
Did they test Oprah's new slogan that she's testing for the campaign?
No. No, I haven't.
You do know what her slogan is, right?
No.
Oh.
But my vajayjay is painting.
Okay, right, that was no, what, it's not. That's,
that, and that was a weird slogan
no,
to think Oprah 2020.
I am not going
to
fall into that again.
My vajayjay is I just thought that was.
Yeah. No.
I mean,
you know what's amazing? The poll shows who's more popular. This is with Democrats. Mm-hmm. Who do they want more than Oprah Winfrey? Number one, Joe Biden.
Oh, they love Jolton
well,
Joe.
How mm-hmm. do that? I don't understand that one. I mean, I can understand a lot of candidates that I don't agree with. Joe Biden, I don't understand how you're like, oh man, if Joe would come out, he's my guy.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Okay, you remember the scene where Tom Cruise is kind of hanging over, you know, in that white room, and he's got to catch that one bead of sweat before it falls down, and the sweat falls, and he catches it, and it's really, really loud. What was he after? He was after the knock list, right? Plot line in almost every spy movie. The knock list is out! The good guys have to catch the bad guy before the names and the locations of the undercover operatives of the CIA and all the good guys are killed. And in the movies, we always get the knock list back. I mean, it's not a problem. The good guys always win. Except that's the movies. This is real life. And I wonder why we're not really focused on this. A former CIA officer was arrested on Monday and charged with unlawfully possessing the National Defense Information, the knock list. He was caught red-handed with two notebooks containing the names of CIA assets and the locations of covert facilities in China. And what was he doing? He was carrying the knock list, but he was suspected of much, much worse. The New York Times reported last year that there was a real problem in the CIA. They were losing agents in China at an alarming rate. Since 2010, the Chinese government has all but completely destroyed our spying operation in the mainland. The CIA had a mole. They knew it. All the evidence pointed directly to the man that was arrested this week. The damage done to the CIA in China is catastrophic. But even worse, the amount of lives that were lost. All in all, he's responsible for the deaths or imprisonment of 20 American agents. Say what you want about Snowden, and I'm not a fan of Snowden. He's a traitor enjoying the protection of Vladimir Putin, but nobody got killed. Has anybody else noticed that if you went back, if let's just say Doc Brown and Marty McFly were real, and we could travel back to the year 1985 and we could look at the news headlines, us, we'd see a world that really hasn't changed all that much. I mean, granted, the music's a lot worse and the clothes are a lot better, but they'd probably assume the Cold War is still raging. Despite Cyndi Lauper and neon shorts, the world of 1985, a scary place. Aldrich Ames was the CIA agent selling secrets to the Soviets. Because of him, multiple CIA agents were killed. Korean Airlines Flight 007 had been shot down 2 years prior. Nuclear tensions were at their highest. Both sides looked like we were willing to press the button. Has anything really changed? It's been 33 years. Have we learned nothing? 3 decades, and life is just as cheap now, if not cheaper, than it was then. The difference between then and today is that with our technology, we can betray, kill, and threaten each other a lot faster. The bad guy, in this case, eventually caught, but the human toll he inflicted makes this story ultimately a tragedy. Likewise, the redundant cycle that we are in and seem to always be in should tell us something about ourselves. How do we break it, both as individuals and as a nation? We can navigate the ship anywhere we want to go. But we can't navigate the ship following pure self or national interest every time. Principles and values have to be our true north. And if we don't make a course correction, I have a feeling that without looking at what technology is going to bring upon our heads, if you take that out, we definitely are in for another three decades of nothing but the same.
It's Thursday, January 18th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
This week we have really kind of featured technology an awful lot, and it is something that I'm very, very interested in, and I'm concerned that we really need to wake up to what is on the horizon, and I mean the near future. Life is going to change. And that means it's going to change the way you do your job. It's going to change the way we interact with each other. It's going to change the way you send your kids to school. Where do you send them to school? What education should they have for the future? And are there going to be the jobs that we have now? And I am quite honestly concerned that because I know politicians, they never take responsibility for anything. They're all talking about, we're going to bring the jobs back. We're going to bring these jobs back. We're going to bring high paying jobs back. No, you're actually not, because those high paying jobs, are not going to exist because of robotics and eventually AI. So what happens when we have very high unemployment roles because of robotics all around the world? I don't think the politicians are going to say, well, that's just the way it is, so we have to find new things. They're going to point to Silicon Valley and anybody making robots and say it's them. When people figure this out and there's no lack of there's a lack of leadership and an absence of real knowledge and forethought, we could be in real trouble, and especially those in Silicon Valley. I wanted to bring on, he's a professor at Rice University, Moshe Vardy, and he is a George Distinguished Service Professor in Computational Engineering. He's also the director of the Ken Kennedy Institute for Information Technology at Rice University in Houston, a co-author of more than 500 different papers, as well as two books, and he made a prediction about the coming year that I read right after the 1st of January, where he said, this is the year of comeuppance for Silicon Valley. Welcome to the program, Moshe. How are you?
I'm very well. It's good to be with you.
Good. Tell me what you meant, a year of comeuppance for Silicon Valley.
Well, I mean, if you think of the image of Silicon Valley in the past, let's say, 25, 30 years, it was viewed as just a font of innovation, economic growth. And now suddenly things are changing. Suddenly now we are feeling that Silicon Valley is producing new technology, which has profound impact on our lives. And the goal there is just basically, what is Silicon Valley about? It's about innovation and profits. But how does it impact our lives? And we have seen now, we are hearing now, for example, about Facebook and fake news. We are seeing greater and greater impact on our lives. And will the political world let Silicon Valley just keep doing what it's doing without some kind of rethinking the rules of the game? I think we are seeing a shift just between last year and this year. I mean, we're hearing Apple investors are concerned about the Apple iPhone, how they're affecting children and teenagers. I think there is a change that I'm sensing in the sensibility between viewing Silicon Valley as just a sort of innovation of economic growth and technology that may have adverse impact on our lives.
You know, it's interesting, Moshe, that there's a lot of people in Silicon Valley, not the majority, but there's a lot of people in Silicon Valley that are starting to become disenfranchised with it themselves. They're starting to move their families out of there because they, too, are beginning to see a disturbing trend of nobody asking, should we do it? Just, we can do it, so let's. And it's bothering them.
Well, we're hearing some regrets from some of the founders of Facebook are now expressing regret about what have we wrought? What have we launched? Are we who is in charge of this technology?
So, Moshe, when people think of robots, they immediately go back to, old style robots. And when you think of AI going out of control, you think of the Terminator. But that stuff, while it may or may not come,
we're going to have robotics are going to be a big part of our life by 2030. They're from the numbers I've seen, 1,000 robots, and that includes Roomba, for every person on the planet by 2030, 2035. And a great loss of jobs because robots will be able to do it better. What? How do we bridge that gap? How do we start navigating towards meaning in our life?
Well, I mean, one is that you've put together several questions that I'm going to try to unbundle a little bit. One is that predicting the future is actually very difficult. Mm-hmm. And we really don't know what the world will be like in 20 years. Just as if you go back about 20 years ago, the internet pretty much is about 20 years old. So who could have predicted in 1998 what the world will be like today, just 20 years into the future? But the best way to predict the future is to look at the past. And when you look at automation, there has been one sector of the economy that already has undergone major automation, and this is manufacturing. So there is this myth that manufacturing in the U.S. has just gone down the drain because of trade deals. But when you look at the facts, manufacturing in terms of output, how much are we producing, it's an all-time high. The U.S. is a manufacturing giant. Only China is bigger than the U.S. as manufacturing. And so we are, in terms of volume, we're at an all-time high. How are we doing in terms of manufacturing employment? You go back to generation, 25% of the workforce was in manufacturing. Now it's about 8%. Just over the last 20 years, we have lost about 8 million jobs in manufacturing. Now, the traditional thinking was, well, no problem. These people will find other jobs. It turns out that this manufacturing was a very sweet spot in the economy in the following sense. You got a good wage in manufacturing. You got paid $20 to $30 an hour. And in terms of education, you need a high school education. You can finish high school and walk to the manufacturing floor and start there as an intern and make yourself to a full-fledged manufacturing employee. And these jobs have disappeared over the past 30 years. And when we want to see what has been the impact, we can go to small towns that has one factory, and the factory is either moved away or has automated, and we see huge adverse impact on these towns. And we want to understand politically what's happening in the United States. We cannot ignore what happened to manufacturing in the Midwest.
You're now moving into the possibility of wholly automating trucking. That'll be a huge impact.
So if you look, you mentioned before, you talked about life today versus the way it was 30 years ago. And you said it hasn't changed much. And actually it's true. If you look today, you go and take a walk in downtown any city, and how is it different than 30 years ago? Well, the styles have changed. And people walk like zombies holding some device in their hand. But other than that, it doesn't look that different. You know, you can go to Cuba, where it's going back 50 years in a time machine. And it looks dated, but it doesn't look dramatically different. In 30 years, our cities will be dramatically different because our cities have been shaped by the automobile. And the automation of driving is going to be the biggest technological revolution that any one of us have seen in our lifetime.
How do the cities change?
Well, because the city has been developed. I mean, look at the difference between New York City and I live in Houston. Houston is an automobile city. It's huge. It's a sprawl. It's enabled by the automobile. You know, we spend, just think of how, what part of the real estate is dedicated to cars, either driving or parking. Huge part of the area is just for automobiles. And so the automated vehicle, or some people call it driverless or autonomous, the automated vehicle will change, you know, transportation is such a big thing in our life. You know, you look in history, we had transportation revolution, the invention of the wheel, the domestication of the horse, the steam locomotive, the Ford Model T. Each one launched a revolution and changed the fabric of our life in a dramatic way. The city of today looks very different than the city of 100 years ago because of the automobile. And so the automation of driving will be a huge shift. It will be a wonderful thing for humanity because we kill 1.25 million people every year around the planet with car crashes. And 95% of all car crashes are caused by human drivers. So we actually are terrible drivers. And so this is a fantastic technology, right? If you save, I have a technology that will save a million people per year. The answer should be, bring it on. And I really think this is a wonderful technology. But we have about 4 million taxi and truck driver in the United States, just in the United States alone. And if you look at the at other jobs that mostly the driving is a major component, like, you know, postal delivery workers, now we're talking about 10, 15 million jobs. And if you think of all the industries are just, they're basically living around this, all the motels and restaurants along the highways. So the automation of driving will be a big F... thing. Okay, that will be a huge thing. It will have huge benefit to society, but it will come with elimination of millions of working class jobs. And we are not having a serious conversation about how is our society going to cope with it.
I would love to continue this conversation with you in the future, Moshe. I know we have
very happy to.
We have to cut you loose, but I really appreciate it. This is the problem that I think we must talk about, and that is, this is all good stuff if we think about it in advance and we plan in advance. Moshe Vardy, thank you so much. Computer science professor of Rice University.
My pleasure.
So, do you have, you know, you have a car or a truck that is out of warranty? I've got a couple of trucks there, the farm trucks, and they've reached the age where, you know, things are going to start going wrong. One of them is a 2008 and 2012, I think. And, you know, I brought them to the shop before I had CarShield, and the mechanic said, you're about to lose this, you might lose this, and, you know, in the next year or so, you might want to, and it's just ching, 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 ching. I have CarShield now. CarShield is affordable protection. So I'm paying for insurance because a new fuel pump costs over $500. Replacing a water pump, $1,000. A chip that they were talking to me, it was like $1,200. All right, so then what happens? You get kind of in the place where you're like, hey, just got to get rid of it, or it's not worth anything anymore. CarShield. They have plans that will cover your car's computer, GPS, electronics, you know, everything. CarShield, the ultimate in extended coverage, and you get your favorite mechanic or dealership. They pay them directly, so you don't have to wait for the check. You sign up today, 24/7 roadside assistance and a rental car while yours is in the shop. Save yourself from the high repair bills. Put the warranty back in your car. Get covered with CarShield before something goes wrong. 1-800-CAR-6100. Mention the promo code Beck or visit CarShield.com and use the promo code Beck. Save 10%. That's CarShield.com. Promo code Beck. Deductible may apply.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
You know, part of me, I just can't wait until we're all, you know, told what to do by computers because people don't make sense. My wife today is in the city. She's in court right now because they assessed my house. I have 4 acres of land. And they said, well, you know, people around you have a house on an acre of land. So you could build 3 other houses on your... And you're like, no, what? No, I...
Wait, so they're saying basically that you could theoretically divide your land.
They're charging me the price for taxes as if I had 3 other houses on my property.
Well, you know, Glenn, if you go to Co-op City in New York, they build, you know, thousands of people live on one tiny piece of land.
It is, and it's craziness. It's craziness.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, what? I mean, the city, the local city has just gone crazy with taxes. I can't imagine, you know, if we ever have a crash. I mean, they build these schools and these firehouses that are palaces, better than anything the private sector could build. And you're like, dude, oh, isn't that nice? Yeah, you paid for it.
Yeah, you did the story the week before. About how now universities, public universities,
public,
are building water parks at the colleges with taxpayer dollars, lazy rivers so that the students can float around in an Think about math. I don't know what they would do.
I have to tell you, if I went to a college and I saw a lazy river, and my because I know Rafe would be like, hey, well, I'm going here. No, you're not.
No.
No, you're not.
We do not need to encourage college students to be more lazy.
Yeah. And it's and, you know, if it's Harvard or if it's Columbia, which is a private university, okay, sucker, pay for it all you want.
Yeah.
I mean, no, these are public universities.
Incomprehensible that a public university.
And I couldn't believe the number of them that had it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all over the country. I thought, okay, who's building? Everybody is.
I mean, look, water parks are awesome. I'm not going to deny that, but I don't think taxpayers should be paying for them ever.
Ever. I mean, I thought I was going out on a limb and unpopular by saying we shouldn't build football stadiums. How about no water parks at public universities?
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Are you, or anybody in your family concerned about a governmental shutdown over the weekend? Because
I'm not all that concerned about it.
No, I mean, unless you're military. I mean, essential services in military and everything else are going to be taken care of. But some people do get their, you know, they're not going to get their paycheck. They'll get it in a couple of weeks. But, you know, for families who are living paycheck to paycheck, that's hard.
Certainly concerns both of us. Right.
Yeah.
And the last shutdown, it was delayed. And of course, they did retroactively pay. In fact, they retroactively paid pretty much everybody that was out of work. So you got basically 2 weeks off unpaid, then got 4 weeks of pay on your next paycheck, which is kind of, I mean, you know, it's a weird situation. But I mean, they keep saying this. They say this every time there's a shutdown, that non-essential employees will not be showing up. And, you know, look, a non-essential employee should not be an employee.
Yeah, like non-essential employees should never show up.
You're supposed to employ people who are essential.
If I were at a company and it was having layoffs or it was struggling and they decided that they were haggling over the budget and they said, non-essential employees are not coming in. We don't want them to come in. But these are the essential employees. I think I'd go find another job.
Yeah.
I think I'd be like, you know, I don't think this is real stable. But the United States government is, you know, it's like quantum mechanics. It just operates with different laws.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I don't know. Usually they come up with some way of patching this together and doing a short-term thing. The calculus will come from whether, you know, Democrats believe that they can win this in the press. Will the people believe that it's their fault? Will they believe the exact opposite argument that they made in 2013?
Here's something that we produced and available at theblaze.com and glennbeck.com, and we'll tweet it out on Facebook. But you have to share this with your friends. This is the left talking about, you'll hear each of these people. First, they'll talk about, you know, this is an outrage what Ted Cruz is doing. Then the same person doing what Ted Cruz supposedly did and shut down the government. You'll hear that they are on both sides of the issue, especially Chuck Schumer is quite eye-opening. Listen.
And some Democrats are saying they will not vote to fund the government at the end of this week unless Republicans embrace a bipartisan solution for the so-called dreamers.
But we still can't say with any certainty that a government shutdown will be avoided. Senator Cruz may have landed in the record books with that long speech.
So I'm not leaving any American behind. I'm not going to vote on something that isn't a part of this deal, a part of this package.
Even those who don't like Obamacare say it would be better for them to deal with this in the normal course of legislation.
Are Democrats going to give up and agree to a short-term continuing resolution?
I think I speak for the vast majority of members of the Democratic caucus. We're not going to desert these young people.
Here you have a handful of right-wing extremists who are trying to annul, do away with the election results of a year ago. We are going to do what we want to do.
Are they willing to accept a spending deal without a fix to protect dreamers? A few have already said their answer is no.
This shutdown is continuing to harm our country, our reputation. It is a needless, manufactured, self-imposed wound.
Does that mean we're headed for a government shutdown?
What we have got to do, it seems to me,
is to pass the Dreamers legislation.
It never occurred to me to bring down the United States government and cause pain for millions of workers. Because I can't get my way.
Any bill that funds the government must also include a fix for DACA.
This is playing with fire. We could do the same thing on immigration. We believe strongly in immigration reform. We could say we're shutting down the government. We're not going to raise the debt ceiling until you pass immigration reform. It would be governmental chaos.
Before January 19th, in order to avert that partial government shutdown. But really what this is going to come down to is DACA and the issue of immigration. At least Democrats are saying that they're united in their opposition.
They have problems with that bill, we will be happy to sit down and talk to them about a reasonable approach to do it. But we're not going to do it with a gun to the heads of the American people.
If they fail to include it in the continuing resolution, there are many of us who will be troubled by that and will take appropriate response. For goodness sakes, this is irresponsible and it's reckless. Why does this senator or the Tea Party Republicans think they can pick and choose the priorities of the American government?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And so here's the good news. You know, we say we don't trust the press, and we don't trust the press because they won't show you stuff like that. They're not going to hold any of those guys responsible. They're not going to treat this exactly the same way they treated the Tea Party. They won't do it. They called that reckless, irresponsible, radical, dangerous, revolutionary, anti-government. Remember all of that?
Mm-hmm.
They will not in the press use any of those words because they don't agree this time. They think that DACA needs to be passed. So you can continue to hope and pray that the media is going to change. But until people start doing like this, what we've done and others have done this so effectively recently, and we share them and retweet them and put them everywhere, the media is not going to change. They'll continue to be effective until you start to show their hypocrisy. This isn't necessarily about Congress. This is really about the media. The media poured fuel on that fire against the Tea Party. And the media is pouring fuel on the fire against the Republicans. Except they have to take the opposite position to do it both times.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine if what just happened with that montage happened to you at your job? If you worked at a restaurant and there was video of you saying, we must go all vegetarian. And then the next 2 years later saying, oh, we must serve only meat. And then you said, we can never serve soda again. And then the next day it's all about soda. And you have every.
And it wasn't because of market conditions.
No. Yeah.
You were trying to convince everybody that you have always been pro meat, pro soda, pro water, and pro vegetarian.
It would be completely irresponsible for us to open on Saturdays. We must open on Saturdays. Can you imagine? Wouldn't you rethink your entire life if you saw that video and you were in Congress? I mean, if you had any care about your word and your honor, wouldn't you just sit back and say, oh my gosh, what am I doing with myself? Why am I doing this?
No, you wouldn't do that unless there was an outcry against it. So you don't, you know, we produce this and it goes viral. It doesn't go to Dick Durbin. Dick Durbin looks at that and goes, ah, it's Glenn Beck.
Another right winger.
Another right winger. Yeah. Until the media says, I don't have a horse in the, I have truth. And they're dropping the ball each time. They say, you know, apples and oranges. Is this an apple? Everybody's trying to tell you it's an orange. It's an apple. We tell the truth. No, you don't. No, you don't. Where are you on this? Where are you on this? Because I can guarantee you, I can go back and we should do this. Let's do this today. I can go back to CNN and MSNBC, and I can get them saying, calling the Republicans radicals, revolutionaries, obstructionists. They just want to see people fail. All that stuff. I can get them saying it when they held the line last time under Obama, and now that they're on the opposite end, I can see them saying that. And you know what? Nobody in Congress has any credibility on the right if you're not saying, hey,
we did this, you know.
Yeah. And this is,
we did this, and we think this is an effective tool if the people are uninformed. But we stand for this principle. We are not going to be pushed around.
Yeah. And to be clear, I think you're right. Every time there's an argument about hypocrisy, if you're arguing the other side is a hypocrite, what you need to do is pause before you make that argument and think about whether you were on the opposite side of both of those issues, too. Because if you were the one saying that, of course, it's absolutely has to be the right thing to do to try to shut down the government or use this as leverage to get something you think is important. If you were thinking that in 2013, you should understand what the Democrats are doing now. That is what
I agree with it. And I do think this is an effective thing. And I do think they have a right to do it. That's fine. Mm-hmm. However, the difference here, why it would be much more full-throated last time is I believed that universal health care was unconstitutional. It was unconstitutional.
Right,
period.
But I mean, they would make the same dumb argument about their point. I mean, look, you could always find
DACA is also unconstitutional.
Right, but they'll say that, they'll come up with their justification.
Up with the same thing, and that was, you don't care about people.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I care both times about the Constitution.
And look, there are differences in these cases. There's minor differences between what happened with, 2013 with the government shutdown and what's happening now. But the bottom line is, if you're a minority party member and you have no power in the government and you want to get this deal done, you're of course going to use whatever leverage you have. Of course the Democrats are going to try this. Now, the Republicans can just do it, but they have their own problems just staying united and figuring those things out. So I don't blame the Democrats for trying this, especially after the president and many Republican politicians have told them that to Republicans, DACA, which we all called unconstitutional when the president did it, is a high priority that must get done. So with that as a baseline, I understand why they think they can try this.
Yep.
And it may work. Usually they find a way around these things. But if there's a government shutdown for a short time, as long as the military is taken care of, it's not the worst thing in the world, honestly. It's happened many, many times in our history. I made these arguments back in 2013 and 2014. And the same thing applies here. The military must be taken care of. And there are parts of these shutdowns that can affect real people in certain ways. But the vast majority of it is, as they call them, non-essential employees doing things that they can get away with not doing for a few weeks.
I just wish these arguments on the budget were actually about the budget.
Yeah. And this has nothing to do with the budget.
I wish it was like, we can't come. They want to spend X. We want to spend Z. And we disagree. And we can't get to a budget. I wish all the budget showdowns had anything to do with the budget. So over the holidays, two researchers had a hunch. They went in. They tried to hack into computers by hacking into the Pentium chips. And it worked. And what they found is with the Intel chips, which is in, it's got to be, I mean, I don't even know the percentage. 90% of every PC, server, smartphone, every tablet ever produced in the last decade. They're everywhere. That there was, for some reason, a back door left on those chips. So hackers could make use of those. Now, they warned everybody and said, hey, by the way, there's a back door in this. You should be careful. Well, anybody who didn't know that there was a back door, those chips are still in everybody's computers. So if somebody wants to get to you, they use, now they know. Here's the route to do it. Now, there's some patches that apparently have helped some, but until all of those chips are replaced, you're not safe. One in four people have experienced identity theft, and that number is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and it will affect you. And thieves can sell your information on the dark web, get an online payday loan in your name. LifeLock detects those things, a wide range of identity thefts. And if you have a problem, a U.S.-based restoration specialist is going to work to fix it. Nobody can do everything and watch all businesses and transactions and save you from everything, because the threat is huge. But they're the best.
So join now. Get 10% off with the promo code Beck. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK. That's 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck at 1-800-LIFELOCK or lifelock.com. Save 10%. Promo code Beck, lifelock.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So, you want to talk about a hero. You want to talk about one of the best appointments by the Trump administration. You have to hear what is the stupid agency called?
The Consumer Federal Protection Bureau.
So this is, you know, the Elizabeth Warren, you know, genius idea. Tell me about the budget here, Stu.
Well, Mick Mulvaney, who we're big fans of, he started running this in a controversial way. If you remember, the old Obama appointee wanted to stay, and they tried to sue, and it didn't work. So Mulvaney took over the organization, and he writes in Section 107A1 of the Consumer Financial Protection Act, it requires the Board of Governors to request a quarterly sum determined by the director to be reasonably necessary to carry out the authorities of the Bureau. Okay, so he has to make him, hey, I need this much money to do business for the next 3 months. This letter from Mick Mulvaney, this letter is to inform you that for the second quarter of fiscal year 2018, the Bureau is requesting $0.
Mick, I love you.
He's awesome. The reason for this is straightforward. I am informed that the projected second quarter expenses are approximately $145 million. During my review of the financial condition of the Bureau, I learned that as the beginning of the fiscal year, the Bureau had a balance of $177 million just hanging around, basically. He writes, my understanding is that the previous Bureau leadership opted to maintain a reserve fund to address possible financial contingencies, although I know of no specific statutory authority requiring the establishment or maintenance of such a reserve. Moreover, I see no practical reason for such a large reserve, since I am informed that the board has never denied a Bureau request. Finally, as net earnings of the Federal Reserve System are periodically remitted to the Treasury, this request, or lack thereof, will serve to reduce the federal deficit by the amount that the Bureau might have requested under different leadership. While the approximately $145 million may not make much of a dent in the deficit, the men and women of the Bureau are proud to do their part to be responsible stewards of taxpayer dollars.
Thank you,
Mick Mulvaney.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. That is the kind of person that we want in Washington, D.C.
He is zeroed up.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.